Good evening. In the news tonight, a funeral for a local imam and his assistant. Flooding in Louisiana reaches epic proportions. And a hunger strike continues for women who are being held illegally with their children in a detention center in Pennsylvania. With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Monday, August 15, 2016. Beginning with international news, an airstrike hit a hospital supported by Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières. This was in northern Yemen today. The strike killed and wounded at least 20 of the hospital's staff and patients. A Saudi-led coalition has been fighting against Shiite rebels. It's been carrying out airstrikes in Yemen since March of 2015. On Saturday, an airstrike on a school killed at least 10 children and wounded dozens more. The Saudis denied hitting the school. They said the target was a Houthi training camp and accused the rebels of recruiting children. Earlier this month, the coalition acknowledged that it had committed unintended bombings and caused civilian casualties during a nearly 18-month air campaign. They blamed UN agencies for not coordinating with it. Saudi government spokesperson Mohammed al-Mansour, in comments published by the Saudi press agency, chronicled 8 incidents that rights groups said killed hundreds of civilians. Médecins Sans Frontières, which operates in conflict zones around the world, has had a number of its facilities attacked over the past year. The group said in May at least 100 staff members, patients, and caretakers were killed, and another 130 were wounded. This in aerial bombing and shelling attacks on more than 80 Médecins Sans Frontières supported and run health structures in 2015 and early 2016. There was a U.S. aerial attack on a Médecins Sans Frontières run hospital in Afghanistan last October. It killed 42 people. The U.S. government apologized for the attack. It paid compensation to survivors and the families of those killed. And also regarding Syria, Russia's defense minister says Moscow and Washington are edging closer to an agreement which would help defuse the situation in the besieged Syrian city of Aleppo. Sergei Shoigu said that we are nearing an arrangement which would allow us to find common ground and start fighting together to bring peace to that territory, the long-suffering land, so that people could return to their homes. Aleppo was once Syria's commercial capital. Fighting for the city has become the focal point of the nation's civil war, now in its 6th year. Russia and the U.S. have been discussing closer coordination in Syria, but so far they've been unable to reach an agreement on what militant groups could be targeted. And while the U.S. and Russia try and figure this out, Jocelyn Sambira tells us that the humanitarian situation in Aleppo is dire.
Including in the east of the city, where close to 300,000 people remain trapped, according to the UN. Castello Road, the last remaining access route in and out of the area, was closed in July. The plight of up to 2 million people in need of aid around the city and those in the surrounding countryside is also worrisome. Meanwhile, the situation in government-controlled areas in the west is also bad, where between 1.2 and 1.5 million people live. The UN deputy spokesperson, Farhan Haq, has more.
Hostilities persisted over the weekend, including airstrikes and barrel bomb attacks on 3 medical facilities in Aleppo Governorate. Airstrikes reportedly struck a pediatric hospital in Bigorem and Al-Huda Hospital in Hor on the 13th and 14th of August. In eastern Aleppo City, several rockets reportedly struck the area in the vicinity of Al-Quds Hospital in Al-Sukari neighborhood on the 14th of August.
In the absence of a ceasefire, the UN continues to call for a weekly 48-hour humanitarian pause in the fighting to provide food, water, and other life-saving assistance to those cut off from aid across the city. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Here at home, Islamic funeral prayers were held today for Imam Molama Alauddin Akanji and Tara Uddin. The two were shot and killed execution style on Saturday. This after they left afternoon prayers at Al-Furqan Jame Mosque in Ozone Park, Queens. NYPD Deputy Inspector Henry Saunter of the Queens South Detective Bureau said the killer approached from behind and shot from point-blank range.
Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
At the funeral today, some members of the congregation shouted justice periodically throughout the service. Anwar Sakhan is a New York City teacher and secretary of the Alfrican Jam Mosque. He addressed those in attendance at the funeral, including Mayor de Blasio. He read the community's demands.
In the name of Allah, the most beneficial, the most merciful, may peace and blessing of Almighty Allah be upon all of you. Respected clergies, the Honorable Mayor de Blasio, elected officials, members of law enforcement, NYPD officials, members of media, journalists, brothers and sisters of New York City and beyond, on behalf of the families of Imam Maulana Alauddin Akhundji and Mr. Taramia, the Muslim communities of New York City and beyond, especially the Muslim communities of Ozone Park and City Line, extend our sincerest gratitude to you for attending the funerals. Show your support and empathy during our deepest loss in our losing our beloved Imam Akhundji and Mr. Taramia in a terrorist act committed by an individual motivated by hatred towards them. Their crime was that they were immigrants, minority, and indeed Muslims. This bigot acted upon his hatred, fueled and motivated by the constant rhetorics and xenophobic statements against minorities and Muslims made by the politicians and candidates seeking the highest office of the land. Dear fellow Americans, the Muslim community has lost a respected religious leader and his innocent associate. We, the Muslim community, firmly believe that America is better than this. We have our faith in our Lord Almighty, the innocence and the decency of the majority of the Americans, especially the New Yorker, that these racist bigots will be rejected and defeated. Allah will help us. Amen. Today, we, the Muslim community, mourn the death of our beloved Imam and his friend. We ask all of you to remember them and their families in your prayers. We ask you to join us in making sure that no one in America is subject to this kind of brutality because of his or her race, religion, and ethnicity. My fellow Americans, if we fail to recognize these ills in our societies, then we will have failed ourselves and our future generations. On behalf of the victims' families and the community, we demand the following. Number one, that NYPD put every effort to apprehend the killer or killers. That number two, that NYPD identify this as a hate crime and deploy hate crime unit and thoroughly investigate. Number three, that until the killer or killers are apprehended, the motive is determined. NYPD must not engage in giving mixed messages and create confusion and anger in the community. Number four, that the NYPD maintain constant communication with the families and the community until the killer or killers are apprehended. Number five, that the helpline reward must be increased to minimum of $50,000 for double homicide. Number six, that each street corner should have security cameras around our places of worship. Number seven, lastly, that the 79th Street, the place of occurrence or the crime scene, 79th Street, be named after both Imam Alauddin Akhundji and Mr. Taramia. Taramia, I correct myself. Now, to our fellow Muslims, please listen up. If you want your rights to be respected in the United States of America, you must make sure to register and vote. Remember that all politics is local. You can make a difference by voting, participating in your local community activities, and engaging your neighbor. May Allah bless you all. May Allah bless the United States of America. Thank you. Okay?
Assalamu alaikum.
New York City's Mayor de Blasio said, when religious leaders are targeted, we all bear the pain those in Ozone Park feel most personally today.
I want you to know that all of New York City is with you. I want you to know that we are all mourning with you. I'm here to offer my condolences on behalf of all 8.5 million New Yorkers, to the families who have lost these good men, to their mosque, to their neighborhood, to the larger Muslim community. It is a time of pain, and this is a pain we all feel. It doesn't matter what faith you come from, it doesn't matter where you live in this city. As one, we feel this pain. When we see two innocent men, two good men, two men of the cloth, killed in such a violent manner, it pulls at all our hearts, all our souls, and we too are focused on justice. For all those here who want justice, we want justice too with you, and we will get justice for this community.
Police continue to investigate the slayings. If you have any information, you are urged to call Crime Stoppers, New York State Crime Stoppers 24/7 hotline number 1-866-313-TIPS, 1-866-313-8477. Meanwhile, a controversy has erupted over a local resident's comments. Khairul Islam said, "We blame Donald Trump for this. Trump and his drama has created Islamophobia." This has been followed by mudslinging against him by Trump supporters on social media. In Louisiana, at least six people are dead as a result of a massive flooding. State officials say it has affected areas in Baton Rouge, Lafayette, and the Florida parishes. Thousands of people have been put out of their homes because of the historic flooding. As of Saturday night, 20,000 residents were rescued from their homes. More than 10,000 were staying in shelters, mostly in the Baton Rouge area. One of the rescuers, Chris Macalusa, has been part of the rescued team with his boat in Baton Rouge. He describes what he sees.
Coming back out of the neighborhood, we're nearing a section where Afton Oaks meets Woodland Ridge. As you can see, these houses all have about 3 or 4 feet of water in them. The water's still slowly coming up, but it's definitely in the houses in Woodland Ridge and coming into the houses in Afton Oaks and places. We managed to get a couple of people to safety this morning, and now we're gonna go try to make sure that water's not coming in our houses. But folks, this is incredible. This is absolutely unprecedented. I don't really know how to put this in words. This is unfathomable. It's stunning. I don't know how else to describe it. Humorous note, I launched my boat off my driveway into my street this morning and I gave myself $5 for the launch. But guys, this is incredible. Y'all be safe. Anyone wondering about Episcopal High School, this is Episcopal High School. We're trying to get down Woodland Ridge Boulevard. It's tough, a lot of current in here. We're gonna get a couple more people out tonight. Y'all stay safe.
Meanwhile, residents of New Orleans are reaching out to help Baton Rouge flood victims. They say, "You were there with us with Katrina. We're here for you now." To help flood victims, go onto social media and search NOLA, New Orleans, Louisiana. Baby formula, packaged foods, hand wipes, and clothing are needed. In Milwaukee, unrest continues. This after a 23-year-old black man, Seville Smith, was fatally shot by a black police officer as he fled a traffic stop over the weekend. City officials say the officer's body cam showed Smith holding a handgun and refusing an order to drop it. Last night, demonstrators clashed with police for a second night.
Yeah, they're starting to throw bricks and rocks again. You can see the march ended here at Sherman and Burleigh, where all of the activity took place and started last night. And then the group kind of splintered off. And a group of them here.
Two dozen officers in riot gear on Sunday confronted protesters who were throwing rocks and other objects at police near where Seville Smith was fatally shot. Police tried to disperse the crowd and warned of arrests. Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett is clamping down on protesters today. He said he is enforcing a curfew.
I want every parent, every guardian to know that there is a curfew that will be more strictly enforced tonight for teenagers. For teenagers. The curfew is a curfew of 10 o'clock on weekdays. So parents, after 10 o'clock, your teenagers better be home or in a place where they're off the streets. We have been in conversations with the city attorney's office in case we need to do more than that for a more widespread curfew. But there is a curfew that is in existence right now for teenagers. And I want every parent, every teenager to know that. This is not the place where you go to gawk. It is not the place you go to take pictures. It's not the place you go to drive your car around right now.
Barrett said the protests are being fomented by outsiders. Sherelle Smith, Seville Smith's sister, says of the looting and burning in southern Milwaukee, "We need our stuff. Take that violence to the white suburbs." In other news, a new poll is out which measures New York voters. It says that here in New York, Hillary Clinton has a 30-point lead over Republican Donald Trump. The Siena College survey released today gave Clinton a 25 percentage point advantage over Trump when the Green and Libertarian Party candidates were included, while 60% of respondents answered no when asked if Clinton is honest and trustworthy. They still rated her as more trustworthy than Trump. They also said Clinton is more qualified to be president and more likely to be effective in dealing with Congress. In environmental news, wastewater is going under the microscope in New York City. An oil and gas industry byproduct from high-volume hydrofracking is wastewater. Billions of gallons of water laced with chemicals, including benzene, a known carcinogen. There have been accounts of wastewater being dumped on roads and highways, left to fester in open pits, or added to a city or town sewage. Some New York State towns have already banned the practice, and New York City is about to join them with a new bill. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more.
Lawmakers on the New York City Environmental Protection Committee on Monday discussed a bill that would ban the discharge and use within the city of wastes associated with oil and natural gas production, including hydraulic fracturing. In 2015, New York State banned high-volume hydraulic fracturing, citing public health and environmental concerns. But the state does permit the use of conventional techniques for oil and gas extraction, which creates wastewater. The State Department of Environmental Conservation allows for the wastewater, which contains brine, as well as carcinogens, to be approved for road treatment. A bill introduced by Brooklyn City Council member Stephen Levin would amend a local law to ban the use of such wastewater.
This has been a challenge, I think, for a lot of fracking companies, is what to do with this material. One thing that has been applied is using it for salinating roads, so de-icing roads, like how we spread salt on our streets. And so that's a significant danger because we don't want to see there are plenty of times in the winter where there can be if it's a particularly bad winter, shortages of salt. We don't want ever there to be an opportunity for any of that material to get into our into that supply of salt on our streets. We also want to make sure that it's not disposed of anywhere in New York City, dumped in landfills or put through our wastewater treatment facilities, which then go back into our ambient waterways. So the East River, the Hudson River, Jamaica Bay, so on and so forth, the ocean. And so we want to make sure that that there's no chance that a private company will haul their fracking waste byproduct from a state like Pennsylvania to the city of New York and dump it into our waste stream.
Councilman Bob Levin said the bill would be voted on during the city council stated meeting on Tuesday. Prior to the meeting, environmental groups in the city will be at City Hall at 11 a.m. to talk about the bill. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
And this is listener-sponsored WBAI in New York. As we've reported on WBAI News, more than 20 mothers and their children are being held beyond the 20 days allowable by law at a detention center in Pennsylvania. Today marks 1 week since the moms, more than 20 of them, began a hunger strike. This to demand that they and their children be released. Andrea Sears has more.
Federal courts have ruled that children with or without parents cannot be held in immigration detention for more than 20 days. And Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson recently claimed DHS detains families for 20 days on average. But according to attorney Carol Ann Donahoe, the women on hunger strike at the Berks County Residential Center and their children have been held much longer.
Anywhere from 270 days to a year, including two-year-olds. And in any other case, if they had not been detained, they would have been released to family and been able to fight their cases in court.
The mothers have sent an open letter to Secretary Johnson saying they are ready to sacrifice their lives so their children can have freedom. Though DHS says Berks is not a secure facility, Donahoe alleges the detainees are treated like prisoners. She explains they sleep six to a room, must check in at intervals throughout the day, and are not allowed an undisturbed night's sleep.
Every 15 minutes at night, the guards come into their rooms and shine flashlights in the eyes of the kids and the mothers. So they are woken up continuously throughout the night.
The majority of asylum seekers who cross the U.S. borders are released to family members as they fight their cases in court. Donahoe points out that the majority of the hunger-striking moms have court orders that protect them from deportation while their cases are being resolved. But instead of releasing them, ICE has kept them and their children in detention without explanation.
These families have other places they can go. There is no need to detain them. And they simply ask to be released and be able to fight their cases outside.
She adds the Berks Center was licensed as a facility for delinquent youth, not families. And in February, the state refused to renew the center's operating license. That decision is being appealed. For Public News Service, I'm Andrea Sears.
In other news, there was a $1.2 million settlement by the Roman Catholic Diocese of Portland, Maine, in a lawsuit by six men. They said the church leaders concealed sex abuse allegations against a former priest. The lawsuits were filed in November by men from Maine, New Hampshire, and New York. They accused the diocese of covering up abuse by Reverend James Vallely. The men allege Vallely sexually abused them as children from 1958 to 1977. Boston attorney Mitchell Garabedian said the Portland diocese had knowledge of multiple accusations, but didn't remove Vallely from the ministry. He died in 1997. And finally, it's the end of an era for another New York City establishment, TechServe, the iconic Apple store and repair shop on West 23rd Street in Chelsea. It has been around for decades. Today, it closed its doors. It was founded by two WBAI tech guys from the 70s, David Lerner and Dick Deminis. They set up an electronic engineering business, which built audio equipment for museums and for the New York Public Library back then. They were fascinated by the first Mac computers. Eventually, they established a business, a place to go if you needed to repair or buy a Mac computer. This was back in 1987. But now, with so many Apple stores and a very crowded retail market, as well as a rent hike when their lease expires, TechServe had to close. Another example of how difficult it is for mom-and-pop-style businesses to succeed in New York City. Meanwhile, auctioneers are cataloging items which include an original 1984 Mac computer signed by Apple co-founder Steve Wozniak. The auction is set for August 23rd. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.